right. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam, for your Tuesday.
Caucus Day.
Tuesday morning. It is Caucus Day.
Caucus Day.
651-989-5855.
Are you going to caucus tonight?
Sure. No, probably not.
They go on past my bedtime.
Yeah. See, I'm.
That's ever stopped you. That's you. Don't take my line. That's my line. That is my line. You are not allowed to take it. Jeff Johnson will be calling us soon. Your place would be great for a caucus. You got like all the animals and
what to hold the caucus.
Yeah. You should look into
all
that.
The
you can hold the buffalo. The buffalo caucus.
We're gonna have a goat caucus.
Oh, be great. It's a great idea. We are going to get to, at some point this hour, before we talk with Pete Hegseth, Doritos to make lady-friendly chips.
Lady Doritos.
Real quick, though, while we're waiting for Jeff Johnson.
They're going to be lavender-scented.
Waiting for Jeff Johnson to call. It got kind of themed a bit. McDonald's world-famous French fries, right?
Uh-huh.
Drew?
Right.
Maybe more than a cure for just hunger.
Okay,
you ready?
Uh-huh.
This is good for you.
Is it?
A Japanese stem cell research team has found a way to eliminate baldness by using an ingredient in McDonald's French fries.
Wait, what?
Yeah. So Sam, after you get Jeff Johnson on the phone, can you go out? I don't know if we can get him this early, but we need to get some fries.
Okay.
And then Drew's gonna rub them all over his head.
Well, if McDonald's French fries cured or prevented baldness, that's fake news, because I clearly would not the follicle situation that I currently am.
Scientists at the Yokohama National University discovered this chemical, of which I am not even going to try to pronounce, used in McDonald's fry oil to prevent splashing, can be used to mass produce hair follicles on mice. And I saw a picture to prove it.
You know, this
and it
might
looked
be,
creepy.
This might be legitimate because I have long hair and I enjoy McDonald's French fries.
Right. You haven't gone bald.
That's
correct. I enjoy McDonald's French fries.
Okay. So here's what we're going to do. We got to get to Jeff.
That's why I've got hair in places that aren't my head.
Here's our experiment, and then we'll talk to Jeff Johnson. So, Sam, here's what we're going to do.
Yes.
You're going to stop eating McDonald's French fries.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Shave your head.
Okay.
And then we'll see if it grows back.
Okay.
And if it grows back, then we know that it's not the French fries.
Okay. We'll do.
That is not science.
I got a razor. I'll bring it in tomorrow.
Science.
And then we can choose different wigs for you to wear.
Perfect. You guys can buy them because they are expensive.
Joining us now, gubernatorial candidate Jeff Johnson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. You've got what's sure to be a long and busy day ahead of you with caucus night tonight.
Yeah, it is. This is an exciting day. It's kind of the start, truly the start of the endorsement process in Minnesota. So we will be working on turnout all day long, and then I'll hit as many caucuses as I can tonight. It'll be fun.
What's your message to those that are considering going to caucus tonight, or definitely are going, and you want to try to get them to show up as a Johnson delegate? What's your message?
Number one, most conservative record of anyone running in this race. Number two, if you're looking for somebody who's actually going to change the culture in government from that of controlling and directing people to serving them and cleaning some house, I'm your guy, and I'm the strongest candidate based upon name recognition. More than three times as much cash on hand than any other candidate, and a proof that I can win independence by a large margin. I did it 4 years ago.
Jeff Johnson, how much input do you have in your schedule this evening, and how do you go about sort of targeting where you're going to go? Is it kind of like we heard previously, where you try to hit as many as you can, or do you look at it through a different lens?
Well, we have to be a little more strategic than that, simply because the big ones, a lot of them will meet all in one big room at the beginning, but then 15, 20 minutes into it, everybody breaks out into precincts. So we'll hit the biggest one we can that meets all together, and then we'll probably hit one or two others and just go from room to room. And what we're looking at is, are there some larger districts where we're just not going to be able to make it to their district convention? And if so, let's try to at least hit those on caucus night. But we haven't quite figured that out yet. So someone will tell me where to go today. Well, probably lots of people will.
How important is this day for you and moving forward? I mean, it is kind of, you know, it is sort of the start of the sorting of candidates. You know, in your mind, you know, how much emphasis do you, not so much put on obviously being busy tonight and reaching as many people as you can, but sort of after this evening?
Well, after this evening is when your organization shows whether you have it or not, because that, I think as Keith mentioned earlier, I actually came in third, a distant third in the straw poll 4 years ago, and people were writing me off for dead, and our organization was able to work to get our people through the process, and I was endorsed on the third ballot, I think it was. So tonight is important, but what happens after tonight is even more important.
And tonight is more about getting, you know, getting those delegates that are firm Johnson supporters that are going to be at the state convention when the endorsement actually happens. What's the strategy in swaying somebody who is maybe caucusing but maybe undecided, and you want them to get firmly into the Johnson camp?
It's hard work. I mean, after tonight, we start getting the lists in of who was elected at caucus night to their district conventions or their county conventions. And, you know, I will travel around the state and sit on the phone, you know, probably 10, 12 hours a day when I don't have county meetings and talk to them. I mean, you can't send mail and get this job done. You actually need to talk to these people, every single delegate, either in person or over the phone. And many of them multiple times, because they take their jobs very seriously, as I always do as a delegate and have for years. And they do their homework, but they actually want to be able to ask you questions directly. They don't want to just read about you on your website or hear from people on Facebook. You need to put the time in, and that is that's crucial if you want to get endorsed.
I'm sure you've had a lot of those conversations already. What's been the most vocalized concerns from potential delegates so far when it comes to getting them to hop off of the undecided fence?
Who's going to win? I mean, I could go into issues. Immigration is a huge issue, refugee resettlement, the business climate and whether we're actually growing jobs in the state. Education is always important to activists and school choice. But for many of them, what it comes down to, as long as they are comfortable that you are conservative and that you're actually going to get in there and change things, which most of them are with me, the question then becomes, who's the strongest candidate? Because we have to win mm-hmm. in November. We cannot handle 4 or even 8 more years of what's going on right now in Minneapolis or in Minnesota, or we'll be well on the road to California or Illinois. So that is what a lot of people want to talk about. A lot of delegates want to talk about why are you the strongest candidate? And I think I've got a pretty good answer to that.
Well, what is that answer? Because I think, you know, one of the most common criticisms that I'm sure you've heard and will continue to hear is that you did run before and you weren't successful. What have you learned from that time of running before that's made you a stronger candidate this time?
Well, first of all, I think that the fact that I did run in 2014 is one of the things that makes me stronger than any other candidate in the race, because as I mentioned, we ran against an extremely popular incumbent with a huge outside money advantage, and I beat him by 10% with independents, running on a very conservative message, and that is crucial. My name recognition is far higher than any other Republican in the race, and you can see that from any public poll that has occurred. No one's even close, and you know, starting on the 40-yard line instead of the 10, which is where I was last time, is a huge benefit, and I've proven in the last race and now again in this race that I'm a better fundraiser than anyone else in the race. But the other benefit of having run is that you do learn those lessons. And if you can't get better, you know, if I can't recognize what we could have done and should have done better, I shouldn't be running. So the biggest mistake that we made, it was a tactical error, and that was focusing almost solely on independents the last 2 months of the race. I'd spent those first 15 months almost solely seeking Republican votes through an endorsement and then a really difficult primary. And we decided we have 3 months left. We got to go get independents. The party told us, don't worry about the base. We will make sure Republicans show up. And so I did that. And we won independents, but Republican turnout was dismal. And I learned a very painful and valuable lesson. Don't rely upon anyone else to get the base out. Make sure you, as a candidate, are out there convincing Republicans who don't know you to get off the couch and vote. And I won't make that mistake again.
Talking with Jeff Johnson again, precinct caucuses tonight, sorting of candidates. And it's not just Minnesota governor. Caucus goers will be starting the process for endorsing parties, candidates, the Senate seats, congressional seats, the House representatives. Do you pay attention at all to those other seats apart from the governor? And is there any sort of reading of the tea leaves depending on how other individuals do? How close do you pay attention to those other processes for all those other seats?
You know, I probably won't pay close attention to that, but obviously if there's a big surprise in there, then you have to go back and look at it and say, well, does that mean we need to be focusing somewhere where we weren't? What will be interesting, because there are contested races for all three of these statewide seats, or the two Senate seats and the governor's race, as we are organizing to get our people through the process, there will be other campaigns, even outside the governor's race, who are doing the same thing. And so sometimes if you've got multiple slates in one district, that makes it more difficult. But that's something I can't control. So we'll put our head down and work for our campaign and get it done.
Another thing out of your control, I asked Downey about this earlier, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well. There's been a lot of chatter about Tim Pawlenty possibly entering this race and possibly forcing it into a primary, regardless of how the endorsement process goes. I know you've previously said that you intend to abide by the endorsement, but does the possibility of Pawlenty entering and a primary happening, your thoughts on that first, and does that sort of change the calculation when it comes to the decision to abide by the endorsement?
It does not for me. I believe that the grassroots control our party, and I believe in the endorsement. I always have. So if someone else is endorsed, I will very enthusiastically help them in the race. And if there is an unfortunate primary this year, I will help them in the primary. I don't think an unendorsed candidate has much of a shot to win in the Republican primary. It happens with the DFO all the time, but it's not the way our party works. And, you know, Tim is a friend of mine, but if he wants to kind of parachute in with, a few million bucks and thinks that that is going to win a primary for him without actually getting to know the delegates on the ground, I think he will be sadly mistaken. It probably will be a long and rather ugly primary. But I will tell you, it's been, I think, 16 years since he last sought an endorsement aggressively. I am happy to bring him around and introduce him to the Republicans around Minnesota that he doesn't know.
with a couple minutes left, last message for those that are considering going to caucus tonight or those that are going. What's your final message to them before the process begins tonight? And give out your website where people can get more information and get involved.
Sure, it's johnsonforgovernor.org, and you can find everything you need to know there. And I really encourage people, regardless of who you're supporting, to get out to caucus. We have a wonderful, unique system here. I would love your support in the straw poll because it is the first step in choosing our candidate. And what I would say is if you're looking for somebody who has a record of actually upsetting the apple cart, not just going along to get along, but taking conservative ideas and changing them, and someone who will actually clean some house in our state agencies like the DNR and the PCA and the Department of Commerce and the Met Council, will actually eliminate the Met Council, then I'm your guy, because we are not going to solve many of the problems that we have in Minnesota until we fundamentally change the attitude and the culture in our state government.
Jeff Johnson, good luck tonight. Thank you so much for giving us some time, and I wish you all the best and all the success this evening.
Thank you, guys.
Take care.
We'll be talking with Pete Hegseth from Fox News just after 8:35 this morning. Got a number of different things to talk about with Pete, including the memo. Is a Democratic memo coming out? We are, looking at another potential shutdown. We'll get all the...
2 days away.
We'll get all the latest.
Got enough money to run this government for 2 more days.
Next, we're going to tackle what is arguably the biggest issue of the day, caucus, schmuckus.
We got serious issues.
Seriously. Apparently, women would love to eat chips that aren't that loud.
That's a lie.
Research says that women do not like to crunch loudly or lick their fingers when eating in front of others. And Doritos is here to save the day.
Lady Doritos coming up next.
Thanks, Doritos. Justice in truth.
iHeartRadio app. It's free. It's easy. And we have a Justice and Drew channel there. If you missed our interviews with Keith Downey and Jeff Johnson earlier this morning, heading into caucus night tonight,
That's right.
You can find those on the Justice and Drew channel on the iHeartRadio app.
Do all those things.
Do it.
Do it. You should.
Later on, in about 12 to 13 minutes, we will be speaking with Pete Hegseth from Fox News.
First off, before we get into this, have either of you guys, I was talking about, have you had, there's these new snack, Dorito got me the other day. I was in the checkout line, impulse buy. They had a little snack thing there. I was really craving a snack. So they had like the snack pack. Doritos is now making their peanuts, and they're encrusted like in a Dorito shell.
I don't even know how I feel about that.
They're so good.
Well, you hate peanuts, so.
Yeah, not really for you.
I know how you feel about it.
I'm not crazy about Doritos, and I hate peanuts.
Well, I love
Doritos. How you feel about it is pretty clear.
Yeah.
Doritos. You know me better than I do.
Doritos are to chips as Oreos are to cookies. They're both wonderful.
I mean, I used to love Doritos. They just don't really appeal to me anymore.
Oh, they're so good.
Is it because they're too loud? Is it because they're too crunchy? Is it because you have to lick your fingers after consuming them?
No, give me all of the crunch.
New York Post. Bosses at Doritos have revealed that they are going to launch a new lady-friendly version of the snack, which is quieter to eat and a lot less messy.
Lady-friendly.
That's how
I've always described myself. Lady-friendly snack.
Food and drinks giant PepsiCo, they own Dorito, has claimed a research found that women do not like to crunch loudly or lick their fingers when eating in front of others.
So change the recipe for all of Doritos, don't take away my...
I want to crunch. I want to lick my fingers.
But yeah, that's fine, but don't gender-specific your studies about crunchy chips.
They say that Global Chief Executive for Freakonomics says, although women would love to crunch chips crisps loudly, lick their fingers, or pour crumbs from the bag into their mouths afterwards, they prefer not to do this in public.
I got no problems with that. I do it all the time.
You watch a lot of young guys eat chips. They love their Doritos, and they lick their fingers with great glee. And when they reach the bottom of the bag, they pour the little pieces into their mouth. Those are true. All very true statements. There's a science to it.
I've done that in public. What of it?
Because they don't want to lose that taste of the flavor and the broken chips at the bottom. Women would love to do the same, but they don't. They don't like to crunch too loudly in public, and they don't like to lick their fingers.
That's what their research shows.
Yeah.
They want to appear ladylike.
So how are they going
to do? They don't consider it ladylike to do those things.
So it's not a male and female as much as there are snacks for women that can be designed and packaged differently. And yes, they said they were looking at it. We're getting ready to launch a bunch of them soon. This is what I love. The low crunch triangular snacks.
Is it going to be soggy?
Will even come with like noodles.
That's like the only way I can imagine that they wouldn't be crunchy.
Dorito noodles.
It's Dorito pitas.
Dorito pita. That's a really good idea.
Like pita bread.
Yeah. They'll come in specialty packs specifically designed to fit into women's handbags. You'll get a low crunch.
Is this April Fool's Day?
Dorito to fit into your clutch.
What? In my clutch. See, like, there's so many different purse sizes also, because you've got, like, a giant bag that you can basically fit yourself into, and then you also have your clutches. So what are we talking about here?
It's just so low crunch.
Well, and, I mean, jokes aside, this seems like such a tone-deaf thing in today's climate to go ahead and do.
Would you be surprised that in the story, a women's group is already complaining?
No, I don't blame them.
A spokesman for the Women's Equality Party said companies that perpetuate these tired gender stereotypes will continue to lose out on the biggest consumer group, women. Hold on. I'm going to push back on that a little bit. There's tons of gender-specific things in society. And the reality is, if Dorito wants to go and make a lady-friendly chip and they feel like there's a market for it, they will find out in fairly short order whether or not there is a market for it. I don't like this idea that suddenly now perpetuate these tired gender stereotypes. There are all kinds of different gender stereotypes.
Oh, it's, yeah.
The thing's marketed all to women all the time.
It's marketed, yeah. You can have the same exact product packaged two different ways, one geared towards men, one geared towards women. And you look at anybody's bathroom and you'll see it.
Right.
Shampoos. You're going to tell me that there's really that big a difference in the male shampoo and the female shampoo, but the male shampoo is packaged with, you know, with dark colors and sharp lines.
It's manly.
Yeah, and the ladies has like a lavender scent. It's the same thing. It's just scented a little differently, packaged a little differently. You see it with deodorant all the time. So it's not surprising that Doritos is doing this. And it's not even, it's being overblown. When you look at the actual interview, the coverage of this is being sort of skewed to be a little more provocative.
Well, because I'm going to take away my fun. It's an easy clickbait article.
It is. That's the thing.
All right, what's the truth?
Women chips.
In the article, the CEO said, it's not so much about male and female as much as, quote, are there snacks for women that can be designed and packaged differently, and yes, we're looking at it.
Right.
For women, low crunch, the full taste profile, not have so much of the flavor stick on the fingers.
Right.
And how can you put it in a purse? Because women love to carry a snack in their purse.
Right.
I think I can relate to that, first of all. I like to have snacks everywhere.
Yeah, they're lady friendly chips.
Gotta have a purse shape.
But I think that they're wrong to market them as lady chips. I think that
that's what they're doing.
No, but I know it's what they're doing. I'm saying I think that it's wrong. I mean, I'm not a marketing expert, but they should have just been like quiet Doritos. Woohoo.
Well,
but it doesn't get as it doesn't get as many headlines.
No, no. Dorito will find out. I have no problem with them marketing chips, low crunch yield chips. It doesn't bother me at all. Dorito will find out whether or not there's a market for it. And women will either go and buy them or they won't. And if they don't, then they'll go and cancel it, man. That's how this stuff works. What I want to know is, will the technology be such to where, you know, the Doritos Locos Tacos at Taco Bell? Mm-hmm. Will they be able to do that in a soft shell? That's what I want. So can I get a Doritos Loco burrito that's got a soft shell, low dust finger, you know...
You want contact ratio. You want a Dorito soft shell.
I want a Dorito soft shell burrito.
I would try that.
Yeah, man.
That's Mike, good time. Coon Rapids. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Do you guys know that there's a Minnesota company that already beat Dorito to the punch with gender neutrality with coming to snack foods?
No, tell us all about it.
Old Dutch chips, Old Dutch foods.
Oh yeah,
they got the cheddar bacon Ariba. They got the regular cheese Ariba. They got the sour cream and onion. They got it in little circles. And guess what? They fit perfectly in women's purses. And they don't judge you if you're fat or skinny, you're ugly or tall.
Right,
it's Minnesota local.
Sorry, Dorito. I'm not convinced, Mike. I just Googled Lady Chips Old Dutch, and I'm not getting anything.
Mike, I buy all those chips. So,
and John would know about Lady Chips.
And John's not even from Minnesota, so thank you.
Mike from Old Dutch, thanks for calling. Marketing director for Old Dutch.
Right?
That was good. He did a good job. I'm sold.
They say no doubt some male consumers will welcome the chance to have a not going to say that. Let's get back to the story here.
Not radio friendly?
No, I highlighted it too, but apparently I missed the joke there, and quite honestly I don't feel like it would be the third sentence out from the bottom of the page there, Drew. I don't know. It's a comment from Women's Equality Party, and she's trying to make it. She's trying to make a joke about package size.
It just says no doubt some male consumers will welcome the chance to have a bigger package. That's all. There's nothing wrong with that. Men usually buy things that, you know, in larger portions, bigger portion sizes.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They're compensating.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
See, now that sound clip is in Drew's voice, not yours. There you go. You're welcome, John.
I want to try these. I'm going to throw off the. I do that all the time, though.
You're going to skew it.
Yeah, I'm going to skew it. I go for the lavender scented hair products. I like to smell fresh.
I don't have hair products. There's not a hair product for me.
You need to eat more French fries.
Jeff, you have a goatee.
Cocato, go ahead.
Every once in a while.
So what you're saying is they're making snacks that fit in women's purses.
Lady women.
People are complaining about it. What about something that fits in my wallet?
A snack for your wallet?
I want a snack that fits in my wallet.
So you want a stick of gum?
I want a stick of gum. I want a Dorito chip that fits in my wallet.
Okay.
Plus, Dorito when are they going to re-engineer the Bugles so they're bigger so adults can put them on the ends of their fingers, too?
Sound angry about that.
I'm serious. I'm amped up.
Somebody in Cocado has got to get Jeff some chips. Or no, I'm sorry, a stick of gum.
I'm angry about the. You just need smaller fingers.
I had a business idea. I haven't fleshed it out completely, but we need to start marketing and selling. I'll just tell you what I do, and this is what got me on the idea. Okay, so I like to snack. I probably shouldn't snack, but I like to snack. Melinda makes these. She takes oyster crackers, and then she gets the ranch.
How did I know ranch was going to be involved in this at some point? I knew ranch was coming.
So you get the powder to make the ranch dressing, right?
Right.
Okay. You put it in a bowl with the oyster crackers, right? And then you sprinkle in some magic. I don't know what else she uses. But it makes the ranch stick to the oyster crackers, right? And you mix it up, and it makes this amazing, like, ranch snack, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so she uses the really small oyster crackers, though, right? And so what I've taken to doing is, because it does get on your fingers a lot, that ranch dust does, I just put it into a cup. So, and then I eat them like I would
drink them.
Yeah. So we need to start marketing. We need to start marketing, you know, cups, but they're snack cups. They're not cups for drinking. They're cups for having your snacks in.
Right. Little crunchy things in a cup.
Yeah. I do that with fishy crackers. Yeah.
People call that cereal.
Yeah, I do that. What?
That's how they package cereal. You need to buy little cereal cups.
Sure. But I said, yeah. So
if you go in like the, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of businesses that do that.
They do. They do the cups, so like an actual cup, and then they target it for just snacks alone.
Yeah,
they did that already. Oh, okay.
There's even like baby, especially like baby food. You get like those baby puffs in the cup container thing.
Hey, are you feeding babies Doritos?
No, I'm not talking about.
That's a terrible idea.
It always gets me in the.
That's why I'm not a parent.
I'm surprised that Doritos is taking the lead on this, because when I hear crunchy and leaving residue on your fingers, the first snack I think of is Cheetos.
Right.
That's Cheetos.
Yeah,
that's what Cheetos are.
Yeah.
And that actually turns me, like, I don't like Cheetos because
of
those very reasons. they're too loud in my head, and I hate having the orange. It is. They're very loud, and you can't hear anything when you're eating a Cheeto.
I do. I can relate to the thought process of
can't hear a thing.
This is ruining my bluegrass.
Can't even hear my thoughts.
It drowns out the voices in my head
and the bluegrass. And I can relate to the thought process of not wanting like really really crunchy foods, because the same thing, like, yeah. I actually I don't really mind crunchy foods except for when my mom's in the room. She hates the sound of people eating, and it makes me anxious to eat in a room with her.
Yeah.
So around people like that, I'm really weird about it, and I won't eat anything crunchy. But
well, the premise
beyond that,
the premise seems to be that women don't consider it ladylike when they're out in public, or if they're on a date, or they're at an event or something, to be eating things with their hands that are crunchy and noisy and make crumbs and leave residue. As the resident woman, is that a concern that you've found yourself encountering at your your horse events that you go to? I don't know.
At the horse events? No. I'll eat chips off the barn floor. But no, like, generally, I guess, yeah, I can relate to that. I don't necessarily want to be the person obnoxiously just chomping away at my food. But first of all, close your mouth. It won't be as crunchy, or it won't be as loud. Second of all, I guess I'm just kind of annoyed, and I don't really have, like, a huge problem with it, but I feel like it would have been smarter for them to just market it as, like, quiet Doritos instead of, like, here's your lady chips.
Hey, ladies,
come get your quiet chips.
Well, first off,
they're only for ladies.
The only place that you can ever really hear anybody munching on stuff is when you go to the movies. At least that's for me. That's the only place I ever notice it. And I'm even conscious of that. So when I go to the movies and I need something to munch on, I usually just bring, like, pickles. It's true. I do. But if Doritos is, you want to figure out a better way, Doritos should just include with the package. If they're worried about getting stuff on the fingers, just, like, either like little rubber gloves or little, like, you know, like, finger slips.
Little finger condoms.
Little
finger condoms that you put on the end of your fingers.
Yeah.
Your Doritos with. It should come with a little package. Little square foil package attached to the bag.
The ladies get their quiet chips.
That's a little condom for a little package.
The ladies get their quiet lady chips. The men get their finger condoms for their chips. There you go. We solved all of Doritos marketing problems.
It's a much better idea than Mike's snack.
I'm just trying to be strong. Let's just completely segregate chips. Let's just do that. Ladies can eat these. Men can eat these. Let's just reverse everything.
This all happened the way that I had dreamed when I did the show prep this morning.
I'm so satisfied right now.
Pete Hegseth from Fox News. Fortunately, thankfully, coming up next. Justin. While we're waiting to get Pete Hegseth on the line, I got a story out of Wilmer, Minnesota, John.
Okay.
A 40-year-old man was injured Friday afternoon after attempting to jump a homemade rocket bike off of his house roof, according to a police report.
Yeah.
The rocket bike consisted of a pair of skis,
okay,
a bicycle frame, and motorcycle exhaust pipe, and was being fueled with heat, an antifreeze product. The unidentified man fell approximately 13 feet and apparently hit a fence in the yard during the fall. When rescue personnel arrived, he was on his back on a sled, pushing himself around on the driveway with his feet. He was reportedly swearing and yelling about the pain, according to the report. A 40-year-old man tried to make a rocket bike and jump off the roof of his house.
Does it, where in the story does it say alcohol was involved?
Right.
Is, yeah. is that in there anywhere?
His last words before jumping off the house were, "Hold my beer." Because of course they were. What else would you say?
Number 12 in the beers that I
before
have.
Before jumping off the roof of your house on your bicycle frame and motorcycle exhaust pipe being fueled with antifreeze.
Natural selection.
Pete Hegseth, have you ever done anything like that?
No, I have not, but I'd like to try jumping on a table from the rooftop like Bills fans. That sounds like fun.
Good morning, Pete. How are we doing this morning?
Guys. Doing well. I'm here in Ohio in West Carrollton for Fox and Friends talking to folks. Turns out $1,000 isn't really breadcrumbs after all. We had one lady say, you know, I can't pay the university my kid goes to in breadcrumbs. They don't accept breadcrumbs, but they do take $1,000. So,
yeah, I.
It's a big one to me, guys. I really think it's a deplorables moment. No, it's so revealing of how the left sees average people. This used to be their constituency, the working class, the middle class, however you want to frame it, and they've turned their backs on them for narrow special interests. And people realize that. And I think the Republicans can run on breadcrumbs in 2018, or at least part of their message.
Speaking of crumbs, these would be a very large pile of crumbs. But latest news this morning, Dow plunges 250 points. Three-day losses total more than 2,000 points. And you know, there's a lot of talk as to why this is happening. And when it comes to stocks, there's a lot of different opinions because a lot of this is because of feelings and emotions on the stock floor and what's going on. But I mean, what's your current takeaway on this? Now we're on day three with this, and it's continuing to this downward trajectory.
You know, I defer a lot to my friends at Fox Business who are trying to dissect this as well. I would ultimately say you can't go to the moon without expecting a dip or a significant dive, which we've seen. Obviously, Dow was down 1,200 points, but I don't think it changes from what I've heard, from what you look at, the underlying fundamentals of the economy, what some people call the real economy, which is GDP growth, wage increases. I mean, I heard from multiple people this morning who said, as an extension of the amount of work that we have, the positions that need to be filled, we're increasing wages across the board in these different businesses, large and small. But I think a correction was due. Most people are way more concerned about their own job security, their own wages, whether they're getting more money back in taxes than they are in the stock market. 401ks are great, but I do think you can overplay your hand as to how much that economy matters when the real economy is in people's wallets. So I think you just can't have that long of a run without a correction.
Sure.
The question will be, when does it stabilize, and then where does it go from there?
Well, and it demonstrates sort of the danger of politicizing the stock market too much, because Absolutely. If you go around and take credit for it, then it's fair for your critics to assign you blame when they do have these corrections, and that's all it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
and it's interesting, too, just one more quick point on this. I'm looking at this article here, and it talks about one individual at Bayard, Bruce Biddles, chief investigator, investment strategist said widespread and excessive optimism left the stocks vulnerable to increased volatility as bond yields have moved off their lows. And so it's, again, when you kind of go back to how well things were going, and you do look at, and you have to factor in the other economic indicators. When you look at consumer confidence, the GDP, the record numbers, the job numbers, all those things are still really, really good. If you had all those things going south as well, or bad numbers and the stock market, I think it would be a much greater cause of concern. But those other indicators are still a positive that the economy is heading in the right direction.
The optimism point is an important one. It was suppressed for so long. We were told that the new norm was 1%, 2% GDP growth, that the only way to increase wages was by raising the minimum wage, forcing companies to do that. Every small business owner you know understands why that's a terrible idea. So there was this unleashing of pent-up sense that America can return and can come back. And so everyone immediately responded to that. So did Wall Street. In talking to these small business owners and employees, guys that work with their hands, machinists, cabinet makers in the last couple of days, they remain optimistic. They say business is booming. My paycheck's getting bigger. I'm getting more money through the tax cut. This is what I've always hoped for from politicians, an actual impact on my life. And owners saying we still have more people to hire. So the fundamentals, as I said before, are good. You're right. It's not a good idea to make the case day in and day out on the stock market, because one day it's for you, the next day it's against you.
Where have you landed currently when it comes to the memo that came out, the FISA memo?
Which
that came
memo?
Out? Oh no, the well, we'll start off with the initial one that came out on Friday. And there was some there, at least for in a lot of our opinion, over what it exposed. Now we're looking at Tuesday. We're looking at this Democrat memo. Where's Pete Hegseth's head on all of this?
Well, no one wants to, first of all, stepping back from all of it, no one wants to see the politicization of intelligence. That should never be the case. But you see that inside this committee. But I blame that almost squarely on Democrats, who are suddenly now uninterested in the fact that it appears with real evidence that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies were used at the highest levels to spy on an opposition candidate. And it was never going to be discovered because Hillary Clinton was supposed to win. And when she won, all of those people would keep their jobs or get promoted, and then it would all go under the rug. Instead, they panicked and had to find a way to... And we know from Hillary Clinton's biography of her own campaign that they immediately latched onto the Russian narrative as something to talk about. So the Dems are panicked because they know there's nothing there, and they've been exposed for the politicization. So their only recourse is to point the finger back at Republicans and blame them of what they are guilty of. It's a typical left-wing Alinskyite tactic. So now they're saying, well, if you release this memo, Devin Nunes and Donald Trump, you're just helping the Russians. You're with the Russians. You're spreading more propaganda that hurts America and for the Russians, when it's the other way around. It's this idea that they want to hide, they want to cover up, Democrats want to cover up the malfeasance of the Obama administration for their own good, and suddenly don't want to get to the bottom of it at all. So I'm incredibly grateful for what Devin Nunes has done.
Yeah.
There's nothing in that memo that exposes national security secrets. We'll see what the Democrats have to say about it. But ultimately, keep investigating. Keep figuring this out. Because if you don't watch Fox News Channel or listen to, you know, your network or other radio networks, you don't know a whole lot about what's actually being discovered as far as, you know, James Comey and Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and Andy McCabe. These names aren't household names in the so-called mainstream media. These memos are needed to verify what a lot of us have known for a long time, that there was espionage of a political opponent, which you expect in third world countries, not in this country driven by the Constitution. So I think you have to keep digging.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you hit on the core of it. I mean, it's funny how the reaction to the memo has shifted so much, where, you know, before it was releasing this memo would be so damaging and detrimental to our national security efforts. Well, that's not true. We've all read the memo now. There's nothing in there. To, well, this memo doesn't vindicate Trump in the Russia investigation, to which Trump says, fine, you know, keep investigating. And now it's, you know, this memo helps nobody but Russia. There's nothing in this memo that does that whatsoever. It's been very frustrating, you know, to see the sort of the shifting reaction when that the core of it is they surveilled an American citizen. And when you're surveilling an American citizen, the threshold for that needs to be, should be, constitutionally demands it to be extremely high.
Yes.
And the core of this issue was, were those thresholds met in the surveillance of Carter Page? And all indications lead to a clear no.
Yeah.
Especially because our system requires faith in the system and fidelity to the Constitution. So if you're in an election surveilling team members of a particular campaign, especially an opposition campaign, then even the perception, the threshold needs to be exponentially higher, when what's very clear is they lowered it as low as they could go. They withheld relevant information just to get their nose under the tent. And then that's what they used to surveil it. And, oh, by the way, don't forget that they accelerated the sharing of this information after Hillary Clinton was defeated during the transition, because they were worried it would be covered up or not revealed by the Obama administration. By the Trump administration, if you read what the so-called intelligentsia, the mainstream press, the D.C. reporters are saying, they're still saying that all of this is an attempt by President Trump to muddy the waters against Bob Mueller. Like, they're so obsessed with Mueller and his special counsel that it's going to find something. They can't actually sort of compute the fact that maybe they just want to get to the bottom of what is one of the biggest scandals that have happened in our country. And the New York Times, the Washington Post, they don't care about it. They're literally in the tank completely for the narrative of Russian collusion and obstruction. And so you've got to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it for anyone to pay attention to it. Their assumption is that people are dumb. I mean, Democrats, a lot of left-wingers, they just assume that regular people in West Carrollton or Minnesota are not smart enough to figure out for themselves. They can't cut through the spin, and they can. And they can connect the dots really well. This memo is part of it. I'll be interested to see where the Democrats try to spin it. I think they're going to say, well, we really thought there was collusion. We really thought Carter Page was guilty. So the memo, the dossier was just one part of it, but we had, you know, Papadopoulos and all these other data points. It'll be interesting to see how they try to explain it away and where it goes from there.
Well, and the Democrats and the left are so stuck on saying, like you said, that this is all Trump trying to muddy the waters of the Mueller investigation. They're so stuck on that, and the memo on Friday proved that, because that's what they would do. This is what the left and Democrats would do if they were faced with a similar situation to try to get out from under it. And it's what they're doing.
We worked with a former MI6 intelligence officer. It was funded by Democrats. It was used by Democrats or people sympathetic to Hillary Clinton inside the FBI and DOJ. So ultimately, it was Russian propaganda that was propagated by our country to spy on Donald Trump. But Trump's the one who loves the Russians, who colluded with the Russians. I mean, you can't make it up. And yet they defend it. And it's why, and ultimately, they have nothing else to run on. And it'll be interesting to see what the message is of Democrats in 2018. Honestly, what are their campaign ads going to say? It's just going to be a smear campaign on Donald Trump and whether you support him or not. Problem is, his approval numbers have rebounded. The economy is strong, despite what people want to say about the Dow, a couple of tough days. And that's going to be a tough thing to run against.
Pete Hegseth from Fox News, we're chatting with, as we do every single Tuesday. Do you expect we'll see the Democratic memo today?
I think so. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what the president ultimately does. Listen, he hasn't hidden anything this entire process. Of course, everything is a hidden plot to fire Bob Mueller. He's going to fire Bob Mueller every day if you watch CNN or MSNBC. Every single day, Bob Mueller's job is on the block. When they've said, how many times does the guy have to disavow the KKK? How many times does he have to say he's not going to fire Bob Mueller?
Right.
He has to say it every single day because they assume he's going to. And again, it's part of their narrative, their TikTok of this guy's unhinged. He doesn't follow the Constitution. He doesn't care about the rule of law. When in actuality, again, they're accusing him of the very things that they don't care about. If you had fidelity to the Constitution, you would care about an abuse of the FISA system. So I think we should see it. Let them say what they have to say and then let the public decide. Transparency at this point is the best policy, especially if you're not guilty.
Pete Hegseth, Fox News. As always, man, thank you so much for the time. Enjoy your time in Ohio.
Thanks, guys.
Catch up with you next week. Take care.
So did you ever notice, real quick before we get out of here, did you ever look in the Blu-ray bin, like at Walmart, when they have the cheap Blu-rays, the big bin?
Not anymore.
Okay.
But yes, I have.
This is to my point. What's interesting about the Blu-ray bin, as you notice, is that the majority of the movies you find in the discount Blu-ray bin are movies that you can now get on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Story out of Star Tribune, Billboard is reporting that Best Buy is going to stop selling CDs this summer. Do you even know what CDs are, Sam? Do you know it?
What's a Blu-ray?
Yeah, I just, this doesn't come as a surprise. When I go to the store, whether it's Target or Walmart or even or Best Buy, and I see all the discs there, I kind of just go, wow, we still got these here?
It's been for a couple years now that you walk by, at least for me, I walk by the compact disc session, and I think every time, this is still a thing that nobody buys these anymore, right?
I could, the only store that I could see continuing to sell CDs within a couple of years would probably be Target, because for whatever reason Target always has like Target specific releases.
Right.
Like you'd only get your Taylor Swift big fancy collection things at
See,
Target.
And I'm only buying those. I'm only buying the physical release for a band that I'm way, way, way into.
Right.
That's it. You know, I'm not buying them for anything
can't
else.
I can tell you the last time I bought a CD. And there's been releases from bands that I love.
Well, obviously you don't love them enough.
But
if you really love them, you'd buy the
CD to listen to their music.
But you'd be put on the shelf and stare at it.
The last time that I bought a CD was, and the only time that I bought a CD in years, was the new Taylor Swift CD. And it's only because I was buying the magazine that came with it. Because I had already bought the digital version. I didn't need the CD. I just wanted the magazine that came with it. And that is genius marketing.
I'm a completist when it comes to Depeche Mode. So I've got to have all the physical releases. But that's the last band that I do that for. Yeah. I still think we're a good
band. The last CD I bought, I remember, it was Southern Culture on the Skies.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
One of my all-time favorite bands. And they got an email, said they, you know, you could pre-order it and it'll be shipped to you. So I went ahead and did that.
10 years before the Blu-rays physical start going away? Maybe more?
Less.
Maybe five.
Yeah. Less.
Where am I going to get all my Blu-rays from?
You're not going to need them anymore.
You're going to have to burn your own Blu-rays.
True story.
What are you going to do?
I don't know what to do. We won't talk about that, though.
Tomorrow on the show, caucus results. We'll start that with Sam's Top 5 at 6:20, plus RNC co-chair Bob Paduchik at 8:35.
I'm off to buy a printer. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Dilly dilly. Open up the door. I'll get it myself. I'm Chris Addison here.